Coverage varies by plan. View contracts and exclusions at endurancewarranty.com.
If you're driving a car or truck with an expired warranty and suddenly lost your transmission or needed a full engine repair, would a $4,000 repair bill leave you stranded? I'm Danica Patrick. Don't get caught off guard with a vehicle breakdown. Choose the company I trust. Endurance. No matter the mileage, if your vehicle is less than 20 years old, Endurance offers comprehensive auto protection plans for any budget. Protection on the drivetrain, electrical, transmission, AC, and more. Plus, benefits like 24/7 roadside assistance and rental car reimbursement on any plan. Endurance handles everything from making the claim through the repair process to paying the certified mechanic of your choice. Don't get caught off guard with a vehicle breakdown. Act now and get one full year of elite benefits, a $2,000 value, free.
Visit endurancewarranty.com for your fast free quote today. That's endurancewarranty.com.
What is something you witnessed that has completely horrified you? Story one. I was waiting for a train to get home one day when I saw a man talking on his mobile. He seemed really stressed and was almost on the verge of tears. I was with a friend at the time, and she pointed him out as well and joked that he was probably stressed about a university assignment that she was also struggling with. We kept talking for another 5 minutes when a train started to speed through, and we saw the man run up and throw himself into it. The train started braking immediately, and my friend and I were just standing there with our mouths open. I don't really know what happened to the man because my friend started crying and panicking. So we walked away and took an Uber back to my house to calm ourselves down. Story two. There have been a couple of things that have really stuck with me. The first was when I was young and a friend of mine got hit by a car in front of school. Although he was fine in the end, with only a couple of broken bones, I was still only 6 years old. It was pretty horrible. One thing happened this year that really stayed with me. During exam season, I had things going on all day and wasn't able to work during the day. So that evening, I cycled to the library at about 10 p.m. On the way there, I came across a man just lying on the ground. He had slipped on a patch of ice and hit his head on the pavement. What really shocked me was that he told me he had been lying there for 20 minutes before I found him, and two people had just cycled past and ignored his cries for help. Who does that? He had actually cracked his head open and also broken his neck. Who knows what would have happened to him if I hadn't come along? What was even worse was that the ambulance took 2 hours to get there, even though we were less than a kilometer away from the hospital. Toward the end of the 2 hour wait, he kept forgetting what had happened to him, so I had to remind him. It was just awful. Story three. I had to put down a kitten that I raised by hand. I took care of it from the moment it was born. The mother refused to feed it, so I took over. I woke up every few hours to feed it, bonded with it. It was my buddy. It was about 9 weeks old and would always follow me around on our little farm. One night, I woke up to the dog barking outside. He only barked when something serious was going on, so I ran out. I saw he was focused on the barn. I heard the chickens going crazy. I ran inside and saw my kitten being attacked by about 20 chickens. I rushed in and managed to stop them, but the damage was already done. Its eye was torn apart. One paw was barely attached, and when I picked it up, I could feel that its internal organs were ruptured. The nearest vet was an hour away, and my buddy was fading fast. I took it outside and laid it down, petting it. It looked up at me, mouth open, trying to cry out, but unable to. So I did the hardest thing I've ever done in my life. I ran inside, grabbed my gun, came back out. I gave it one last pat on the head, wiped my eyes, and ended its suffering. I stood there for a moment in shock. I dropped my gun, walked out into the cornfield, sat down, and just cried. I was 17 at the time. I'll never forget it. In my heart, I know I did the right thing. Some people I've told called me heartless, but I don't care. It was going to die painfully. I ended it quickly. I still miss him. Story 4. When I was younger, 15 to 16, I was vacationing in the UP, Michigan with my parents. On our drive back, we saw a car accident involving several vehicles, a couple of cars, a car boat trailer that jackknifed, and an overturned semi. We called 911. And my dad and I ran up to help while my mom stayed back with my younger sister. I remember running to one of the cars in the ditch that had hit a tree. The guy driving had clearly hit his head hard. No airbag deployment, but at least his seatbelt was on. His face was badly injured and swollen. He looked dazed and said, "What just happened?" I explained and wrapped my t-shirt around his head to stop the bleeding as best I could. I told him not to move in case he had more serious injuries that could be worsened. I had basic first aid training from working as a lifeguard, for those wondering how I knew what to do. He agreed and told me to help anyone else. My dad yelled that the couple in the jackknifed car boat trailer were badly hurt. The passengers' legs were pinned, possibly crushed, from the dashboard being pushed down over them. We couldn't get her out. The semi-driver was unfortunately dead, ejected from his vehicle, probably because he wasn't wearing a seatbelt. It was disturbing to see the trail of red leading to where his body came to rest. My dad told me to stay back when he checked for a pulse and found none. By then, paramedics and the fire department arrived and started their work. We backed off and explained what we had seen and where the victims were. Luckily, the man in the car I helped ended up being relatively okay, aside from a bad headache and a broken nose. I never found out what happened to the couple with the trailer. I still remember everything about that day, and I'm 33 now. It's the scariest thing I've ever experienced, but I'm glad I was able to help, even if it wasn't much. I still get a Christmas card every year from the man in the car, updating me on how he and his family are doing. Story 5. While I was deployed to Afghanistan, I ended up doing some work at one of the truck depots near the Pakistani border. We were out in the yard one day while the trucks were filling in, and the truckers were taking a break, talking to one another, getting food, etc. There were these kids, boys between 10 and 12, who would usually accompany the adult drivers, and you knew they were there for disturbing reasons. And while we were working, every now and then, you'd see the truckers go and call a boy back to their cab, and you knew what was going on. It's really easy when you're back in the States to say that you'd never let that kind of thing happen. It's really easy until you're in a situation where there's only a few of you, and a few hundred of them, and it's ingrained in their culture. There had been a tragic incident just weeks before, because someone tried to stop this from happening on base, and it cost him his life. So you just focus on doing your job, getting through it, and going home. It's been 6 years, and I still remember the faces of those kids and the dejected, beaten-down way they roamed around. I don't glorify cultural acceptance anymore. The world can be a very dark place. Story 6. When I was 4, I witnessed my grandmother get horribly burned. It was Father's Day, and she was lighting a charcoal grill. I guess there was a buildup of fumes from the lighter fluid, and a gas ball shot back and burned her from her neck down to mid-waist. I was standing in the laundry room watching her light the fire. I'll never forget the black smoke and the screams. After that, I remember everything in flashes. My dad, grandpa, and uncle running outside. Her being brought inside. Her standing in the dining room with a dusty rose-colored towel draped over her shoulders. Her bra had melted to her body. There was no shirt left that I can remember. There was a debate about the best way to get her to the hospital, as they lived, and still do, they farm, in a rural area with no 911 access. It was a good year before she got to come home. She's a tough woman. She relearned how to play the piano. She still grills. She's just hard to get into a photo. She's a beautiful woman now in spite of the scars. I really need to go over and give my grandma a hug. Story 7. I was a paramedic and we got called to a house. On the floor was a 7-year-old, laid flat on his back on a blanket, perfectly placed. It looked suspicious. The mother's boyfriend was there and he said the kid hit his head in the shower, but the kid was dry. He wore a diaper for an incontinence issue, and that was dry too, more suspicious. No police were nearby to respond. The child had a severe head injury, and I stayed back to gather equipment while the ambulance crew transported him. The boy later passed away. The boyfriend followed in his truck, but his windshield was icy. As he scraped it, he confessed that he had struck the boy because he had wet himself. I was later called as the lead witness for the prosecution at his trial. However, he pleaded guilty to second-degree manslaughter before the trial. He was later killed by other inmates in prison. Story 8. I was working at a frozen yogurt store when a very elderly couple came in one afternoon. I'm talking 90-plus easily. They each ordered their respective cups of yogurt to go and walked out of the store. On the way out, the elderly woman tripped on the door threshold, which to be fair was oddly high, and hit her head on the sidewalk out front. I immediately rushed to help her, and she had a welt on the top of her head the size of a golf ball. The husband remained strangely calm the whole time, while I was completely panicked. I went to get some ice for her, but we didn't have any, so I ran next door to grab some. I came back with a rag full of ice and asked if she was okay. She looked at me and said, "I think so." As she said that, a stream of blood suddenly gushed from her forehead, and I immediately insisted on calling emergency services. The husband demanded I didn't. In my adrenaline-fueled panic, I somehow believed I wasn't allowed to call an ambulance if someone told me not to. I was wrong. Meanwhile, the husband just calmly munched on his vanilla frozen yogurt. After about 3 minutes and a worrying amount of blood, they got into their car and drove off. I have absolutely no idea if she survived, but my guess is that she didn't. Story 9. One day when I was 13 and walking home from school, I saw smoke rising in the sky around the corner. I thought someone's house must be on fire, though I couldn't see it clearly because a building was in the way. When I got around the corner, I saw a crowd of people from school gathered near the footpath, clearly witnessing something alarming. Once I got close enough to see what was happening, I saw a woman in her front yard on fire. I mean her in-
This is an ad by Regain Couples Therapy. Let's be honest. Loving your partner doesn't mean you always like them, and guess what? That's normal. Regain offers couples therapy that's flexible, affordable, and 100% online. Whether you're reconnecting or working through conflict, Regain is here to support you both. See why people wish they'd try couples therapy sooner. Visit regain.com/couplespod to get 10% off your first month. That's regain.com/couplespod.
Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Plus, get three Scotts NatureScapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9, selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii.
Entire body from head to toe was engulfed in flames, and she was screaming. Her husband was standing next to her, trying to hose her down. By trying, I mean the water coming out of the garden hose was as weak as a light stream. I remember thinking, turn the water up, make her roll on the grass. Eventually, she collapsed and just lay there, still burning. After a while, I ran home because I was in shock and terrified. The thing that stuck with me most was that her young son, probably about 5, was standing only a few meters away, watching the entire thing. For a long time afterward, whenever I walked past that house, there was still a black patch of grass where she had fallen and burned. I later found out her husband had been mistreating her and cheating on her, and she had poured petrol over herself and lit a match. It made sense why he didn't really try to save her or seem emotional. He stood there like he was watering a plant, calm and detached. She suffered third-degree burns to 90% of her body and died. About a week later, there was a funeral, but that black patch of grass remained for almost 2 months. Story 10. I used to work at an airport, and there were tons of dangerous practices. We submitted paper after paper to management all the way up the chain, but nothing was ever done about it. Then a union came in and helped us push harder, even though legally we couldn't unionize. Still, nothing changed. A bunch of people wanted to strike. I talked every single one of them down because I wanted to try being more respectful and not resort to brute force like that. We had also signed agreements saying we wouldn't strike, and under federal law, striking wouldn't have been legal. Then one day, a guy I didn't really know who worked with me took a corner toward a plane. There weren't enough people to stand there and warn others the engine was running, and the vehicle he was driving had no seatbelt, hood, sides, or doors. He tried to pass by, got knocked off, hit his head on the ground, and died instantly. The next day, they implemented the safety measures we had been asking for years. If we had gone on strike, we could have shut down the airport and forced them to listen. But because of me, we didn't. The worst part? This happened in 2012. It's not ancient history, and the smell of jet fuel still makes me sick to my stomach. Story 11. I used to attend autopsies and suspicious death scenes for my job. In smaller cities, under 50,000 people, prosecutors also serve as coroners. There was a case involving a family of 5 after their minivan crashed. They were driving too fast in the snow. The dad had been drinking. Pregnant mom, teenage daughter, and baby all died. The tween son was rushed to the hospital. The father survived with only minor injuries. The floor of the van was an inch deep in blood, and there was a beer can floating in it. The kid stuck with me. He had been sitting in his sister's lap. He looked like he had been thrown against a wall at 55 miles per hour multiple times. I attended the pregnant mother's autopsy. The baby was about 4 months along. Then there were two teenagers who were found hanging in the woods, ruled as suicides. It took over a week to find them, and they were in bad shape. I had actually cut one of them a break on a previous offense. His uncle was the one who found them. Later it turned out they had been running drugs for a gang. I'm pretty sure it was murder, but nothing could be proven. There was also an autopsy on an obese man, another suspected gang hit. His legs had been broken, he was run over by a car, his throat was cut, which was the cause of death, and his body was beaten after death. Before he died, they tortured him, ripped out his fingernails with pliers, cut off his ear, and burned him with cigarettes, among other things. In the autopsy, all his organs were coated in a thick yellow layer of fat, even his testicles. That really motivated me to take care of my health. Story 12. There was a faint but terrible smell coming from a huge ceramic urn outside my bedroom window. I went out to check and saw it was full of water with a weird gray scum floating on top. I grabbed a stick and poked it to see what was inside. Piercing the surface with the stick was like popping a bubble of the worst stench imaginable. That's when I realized the scum was made up of hair. The water had a rotting pink color, and there was something solid just under the surface. I wedged the stick underneath and lifted out the now completely hairless and translucent body of a massive rat. I could see its organs through its skin. That's when the full force of the smell hit me, and I retched. I dropped the rat and the stick back into the urn, then dragged the whole thing to the back of our property where there's a drop down to a stream, and I pitched it over and ran before the smell hit me again. It wasn't a human body or anything traumatic like an accident, but that smell was absolutely vile. Story 13. I was the first on scene at a car accident. A couple of friends and I had just returned to one of their houses after seeing a movie. As we got out of the car and were walking to the front door, we heard a huge crash. I'm not certain, but I could have sworn I felt the ground shake. After hearing the noise, I ran up the street toward where I thought it happened, and there it was. A car had plowed through a brick wall and nearly into a house. There were twisted arms dangling out of the windows, and what was really eerie was that it was completely silent. I called 911 right away. They were asking me questions like what kind of wall it was, how close the wall was to the house, and so on. But I was so panicked, I didn't know how to answer most of them. Emergency services arrived, and one of the officers asked me to stay and help with details. So I got to witness the entire process. Firefighters using the jaws of life, victims being loaded into ambulances, everything. One of the victims must have regained consciousness because they started loudly asking questions while being loaded into the ambulance. Not screaming, just panicked and confused. Definitely something I'll never forget. Story 14. I was in St. Petersburg late at night, trying to figure out how to get back to my hotel. I was walking along the river, heading south toward the Nevsky District, when I heard a group of people on the other side arguing with a man who had been stripped down to just his underwear. I couldn't make out their faces or details clearly because it was 3 a.m. and my eyesight isn't great. I didn't want to draw attention to myself, so I kept my head down and kept walking. A few seconds later, I heard a distinct splash and saw the man thrashing in the water, but he wasn't making any noise. It was around minus 25 degrees Celsius that night, and no one could survive more than a minute or two in that temperature. I crossed the street and got as far away from the scene as I could, into a more residential area. Luckily, a taxi passed by, and I flagged it down and made it back to my hotel safely. I think about that man every day, but there was nothing I could have done. I had been kidnapped by a criminal group the day before for offending their choice of drinks, driven around by them in a car with some intimidating men and threatened with weapons. They extorted me for over 2,000 euros, which is why I knew I had no control over anything. The whole experience made me incredibly cautious and anxious. I don't know what that man did to deserve what happened, but I hope it wasn't something as trivial as my situation. Story 15. I was driving home one day, less than 2 minutes away from my house. At a corner, I saw two men clearly involved in a minor car accident. As I got closer, they had moved from the shoulder of the road into the street, arguing. I stopped because they were directly in front of me. That's when the younger, larger man, maybe in his early to mid-30s, shoved the older man, who looked to be in his late 40s or early 50s. They started throwing punches. After just three hits from the younger guy, the older man was on the ground covering his face. He didn't stand a chance. The younger man kept hitting him as he lay there. That's when I drove around them and headed home. I still feel like such a coward for not doing anything. The man was injured and bleeding, trying to shield himself from the blows. I keep telling myself, there were witnesses. I saw neighbors in their yards watching. It's not like no one saw this, right? But that never really makes me feel any better. Story 16. I was an 8-year-old boy in a car with six other people. We were heading to Bahawalpur, Pakistan from Karachi, a few hours' drive. We had a driver. I remember this traumatic experience vividly. We were just outside the city a few minutes away, going to visit family. With us were my mom, dad, sister, my mom's sister, and her 4-year-old child. My dad got a message from a family member. Benazir Bhutto has been assassinated. That's when things spiraled. As we got closer, we could see the city glowing orange in the distance, and we could hear yelling and gunshots. The driver started to panic, so my dad told him to stop and took over. Now he was driving with urgency, weaving through streets in any direction that didn't have crowds. And by crowds, I mean mobs. Torches, weapons, overturned cars. He called one of his army friends and managed to get us into the only safe place in the city, a military zone called Defense. We made it in and were given a small room where we stayed for 3 to 4 days. Those days are a blur. What I do remember is the constant smell of smoke and the sound of explosions and gunfire. To keep me and my sister calm, my dad made a game out of trying to name the weapons making the noise. Fast forward to when we left with a military convoy, two armored jeeps with mounted weapons, three transport trucks with armed troops, and two vans carrying other families trying to escape. The journey back was slow and terrifying. The convoy moved carefully, avoiding burning wreckage, cars, trucks, and worse. For an 8-year-old, it was horrifying. Months later, back home, I heard a massive blast. I ran to the rooftop and saw the Marriott Hotel off in the distance go up in smoke. It had just been hit by a truck bomb. I've seen some things, and when I tell people I'm used to the sound of explosions and gunfire, they probably misunderstand what I mean. Story 17. I was traveling in India for a few months, and there were families of monkeys that would hang out outside our window every day. They were really cute. A lot of the mothers carried their babies on their underside. One day I saw a mother monkey still carrying her baby, but the baby had clearly passed away. Still, she clung to it. The other monkeys in the group stopped and tried to take the baby away from her, but she refused to let go. Then a male monkey, possibly the father, stepped in and grabbed the baby from her and threw the body a few meters away. The rest of the group began to move on, but the mother stayed behind, returned to the baby's body, and just sat there, gently poking it, looking devastated. Then a couple of the other female monkeys came and put their arms around her, comforting her. Eventually, she left the baby behind and walked off with the others. It was so human. I saw a lot of difficult things in India. Poverty, illness, homelessness, even human bodies. But for some reason, that moment affected me in a completely different way. Story 18. I had an internship with my local police department last summer. I want to be a police officer after I graduate this semester. And I've been involved with that particular police department ever since I was 14 years old. The internship was wonderful, and I definitely learned a lot. However, there were two things I saw that I will never forget. I was riding third shift one night, and things were pretty quiet. I was sitting in a squad car with the officer I was riding with, just chatting about whatever. Then we got a call from dispatch telling us that a woman was on the phone, screaming. The only thing the dispatcher could make out was the address and that someone had been hurt. We headed out quickly and were the second ones to arrive. As we walked through the front door, there was a body lying on the floor with blood everywhere. The man on the floor had been stabbed 9 times by his 15-year-old brother. I think the man was 26 or 27, but I can't recall the exact age. The 15-year-old came out of the bathroom covered head to toe in blood. He told us that he couldn't take how abusive his brother was anymore and just snapped. The kid seemed like a decent person, and it was really sad and disturbing to witness. He never had any issues at school and was on the honor roll. The second incident involved a guy on a motorcycle who decided to go 70 in a 45 zone. An officer tried to pull him over, but he sped off. The officer didn't chase him, just followed his path. The rider's hat started to fly off, so he reached for it, and that's when he lost control and slammed headfirst into a guardrail. He wasn't wearing a helmet, but even if he had been, it likely wouldn't have helped much. His head injuries were catastrophic, with blood and brain matter on the guardrail and concrete. After the investigation, the officers estimated his speed at the time of impact was 130 miles per hour or greater. Story 19. In high school, sometime in the winter months around December or January, I was startled awake in the middle of the night by doors slamming, people running from room to room, and the agonized screams of a young man in our living room. I sat up in bed, heart racing, unsure if someone had broken in or who was out there screaming. I heard people run to the bathroom just outside my bedroom. My mother and a man were crying and wailing in pain. I opened my bedroom door, and standing in front of me was the bloodied body of a longtime friend's son. He was only about 28 at the time. His stomach was torn open, and I could see more than I should have of his insides. It looked like he had been attacked by an animal, with skin hanging loosely over the wounds. I only had a moment to stare in shock before my mom pushed me back into my room and told me to stay there and not come out. I sat in the dark, trying to make sense of what was happening outside my door. All I could hear was this guy, someone I sort of knew, crying out over and over, "I killed her. I killed her." My mom was trying to patch him up and keep him conscious, asking, "What happened? And do you know where you are?" But he kept sobbing and repeating, "She's dead. I loved her. I killed my girlfriend." Later, my mom explained that he had been drinking and speeding when he hit a patch of ice while turning a corner. The car flipped multiple times. He left the scene on foot and got picked up by a stranger who dropped him off near our place because his dad lived with us at the time. He didn't know where else to go, just that he was going to jail and that his girlfriend was likely dead. She said they drove down to the scene and found that rescue crews were still trying to pull the woman from the car using the jaws of life. My mom told me I wasn't allowed to speak about what I saw that night to anyone, ever, and so I didn't, except for my best friend. From what I heard, he was on the run for a while, but eventually turned himself in. I have no idea what happened to him after that, or if he's still incarcerated. Living through a real-life crash aftermath like that was a vivid deterrent to drinking and driving. I now share this story with anyone I meet who makes excuses for driving under the influence, hoping it'll make them think twice. Nothing will ever erase what it felt like to witness someone realize that they had just taken the life of the person they loved and ruined their own life in the process. Story 20. The death of a friend who basically mentored me through high school really messed me up. He had only been 20 years old for a little over a month. I was 18 at the time. He died on New Year's Eve going into 2014. It was only 3 or 4 hours before he passed that we were hanging out at my place with a bunch of people, including his brother, who I had originally met since we were in the same grade. I still remember the look he gave me the last time I saw him. He had asthma and simply stopped breathing around 9 or 10 o'clock. He had been drinking all day and smoked some weed here and there, but nothing out of the ordinary for a New Year's celebration. A few years before that, he had put a hole in his lungs from smoking poppers, a mixture of substances, which I won't explain here to avoid encouraging anything. His brother woke up from taking a nap in my spare room that night and freaked out when he saw he had multiple missed calls from his dad. I just knew right then and there that it had to do with his brother. Everyone else stayed in the house, and I, still in shorts and flip-flops, ran with him into the driveway to get a ride to the hospital. I'll never forget the scream he let out when his dad confirmed that his older brother had died. We both dropped to our knees in the snow. It felt like the world had collapsed. When a mutual friend pulled up in a car, I hesitated because I wanted to tell the others where we were going, but he looked at me and said, "You're either staying or going right now." So without another word, I got in the car. It felt like another universe when we got to the emergency room. All of his friends were crying, hugging, and trying to console each other. It was absolutely brutal. I broke down before I left the hospital. I slammed my head against the wall in the foyer a couple of times, telling myself I had to see him one last time. Without even asking, I stormed into the room where he was with his family, and it happened to be the worst possible moment. His younger brother, the one I came with, was on his knees at his brother's side, crying and shouting, "Wake up! Wake up!" Needless to say, the next 2 weeks leading up to the funeral were hell. I started using anything I could find just to stop crying and get some sleep. I even came close to overdosing at school. which was incredibly reckless. On the morning of the funeral, the power went out and my alarm never woke me up. I still got dressed and walked over to the church, only to see everyone leaving. Since then, his younger brother and I haven't really stayed in touch. A mutual friend of ours, someone we'd all known since kindergarten, also died last summer at 20 from an overdose in the oil fields. I think maybe his brother avoids contact because all of our memories are tied to either him or that friend. And honestly, I don't blame him. When our mutual friend died, I was angry because he knew what we had already gone through. I miss both of them all the time, and I'd do anything to bring them back. Not a week goes by that I don't think of them. Moral of the story, if you know someone with asthma who smokes anything regularly, do what you can to get them to stop and avoid dangerous substances. They're not worth it. It's taken me 3 years of struggling, but I'm finally seeing a doctor this week for mental health support. I'm also starting college in 2 weeks as a late starter, hoping I can leave all this loss behind and start a new chapter. If there's anything I learned from him, it's that the universe is chaotic and sometimes things don't happen for a reason. Sometimes things just happen. Story 21. I was driving past a train station when I saw 4 to 5 teenagers pushing around an elderly man. A crowd of school kids was standing nearby, recording it and cheering them on. I hit the brakes, jumped out of my car, and went absolutely ballistic on those kids. Mind you, I'm a petite 5'2" woman in my 20s. I rushed up to the elderly man, who was terrified and humiliated. And above all, he was partially blind. I offered him a ride home. After he got in my car, I turned back and gave the group a loud speech about how ashamed they should be and how they were acting like the worst of society. As I was driving the man home, he started to cry. My heart broke. He told me he had lost his wife a month prior, that he wasn't allowed to drive anymore due to his eyesight, and that his wife used to drive him everywhere. Now, since she was gone, he had to take the train to go to bingo and to his doctor's appointments. His name was Alfred, and after that day, I gave him a lift twice a week to his appointments and bingo nights until he passed away. Watching those kids torment a clearly vulnerable and frail elderly man was one of the most horrifying things I've ever witnessed. It still makes me incredibly sad and angry. Story 22. I was sitting on the bus heading home. Let me sketch the situation. The bus drives past a hospital at one point. I was sitting on the seat behind the door. To the left of me was a double seat, and directly in front of those were 2 one-person seats facing each other. One also faced me. Behind the one-person seat facing me was another double seat, also facing me. There was a guy sitting on that one-person seat facing me. Suddenly, he fell over. The seat was on a step, so he fell hard onto his head. The people on the double seats across from me saw it happen and helped him. Luckily, the bus driver saw what happened and stopped at the next stop, which was right at the hospital. He called the hospital while driving. We stopped at the hospital. I looked at the man, and he had wet his pants, and there was some blood coming from his eye and mouth. He slowly turned purple and let out his final breath, which is creepier than you'd think. He stopped breathing. Finally, the ambulance arrived after around 4 minutes. They started resuscitating him. The worst part was that I couldn't take a different bus. I had to wait 15 minutes for the only one I could take. Several buses stopped there, but only one was on my route. So I stood there and watched them try to revive him. I don't know if he survived. It's terrifying to see someone go from red to purple to nearly white. Story 23. When I was younger, about 11, I was having a sleepover with my siblings. Halfway through the movie we were watching, I heard something strange going on outside. I peeked out the window and saw a woman running around for about 10 seconds before collapsing on my neighbor's driveway. I thought she was drunk until my neighbor shined a flashlight on her. Blood was everywhere. She had been shot 4 times. I later found out she had been shot 2 times in the face, 1 in the chest, and 1 in the arm. I can't say exactly how much time passed, but maybe a couple of weeks later, I was at the hospital for a sprained ankle. As I was being wheeled in to get it checked out, the same woman was being wheeled toward me. Some sort of grim wheelchair face-off, I guess. I could see where she had been shot, and the expression on her face was haunting. Her eyes stayed fixed on the floor. She looked like she had nothing left to live for. Did I mention it was her husband who shot her? I don't know. Maybe it wasn't the worst thing I could have seen, but it shook me up more than I can explain. Story 24. Back when I was a kid, 16, my younger brother, 11, and I had gone to a party with my dad, who was well into his senior years. We were headed home via mountain road. In front of us was this old yellow El Camino. Nothing unusual. No one speeding. We came to a downhill portion of the road, and the El Camino tried to downshift, except it went into reverse. At about 45 miles per hour on a downhill right turn, the reverse lights came on, and my dad slammed on the brakes. The El Camino fishtailed, went sideways, and rolled over. On the second or third roll, the driver was ejected through the passenger side window. I'll never forget the sight of him flying through the air. But he was lucky. A fraction of a second earlier, he would have hit a stone wall. A fraction later, he would have landed on the road. Instead, he crashed through a stand of banana trees and landed in the dirt. If you've never seen banana trees, they're relatively soft, not hardwood. That probably saved his life. We stopped immediately, and all my Boy Scout first aid training kicked in. We managed to stop some of the bleeding, kept him from getting up, and stayed with him until the ambulance arrived. We later found out he got off pretty light, just a broken leg and several broken ribs. All in all, it had a fairly happy ending. But it was just a matter of microseconds between what happened and watching a kid my age die. He was 16 years old. His dad had let him borrow the car, and it almost cost him his life. One of the scariest things I've ever seen. Story 25. This happened just over a year ago. Me and a group of friends went to an amusement park, and we met more people while we were there. So there were about 12 of us total. We were about ready to leave, but decided to get on one last coaster on the way out of the park. We got on and everything seemed normal. But by the end of the ride, I looked down and saw a man lying in a pool of blood. I was the only one from our group who noticed it. I freaked out, thinking someone had fallen from the ride. I swore I'd never get on a coaster again. But it turned out the man had jumped the fence and gotten hit by the ride car just ahead of ours. It was shocking. We all sat outside the ride, not really sure what had just happened. We still didn't know all the details. Then we saw the ride operators talking to his wife and kids. The kids were very young and clearly didn't understand what had happened. But I can still hear her screaming, "Why did he hop the fence?" over and over again. That's the part that really stuck with me. And thinking about how, if he had waited just a little longer, one of the three rows of friends I had on the coaster could have hit him. It's chilling. That was a strange and heavy day. Story 26. I remember the blank stare my mom gave me when she had a heart attack. I woke up to my dad yelling and ran in to see my mom sitting on the floor, and he was helping her up. She said she had fallen and that she was all right, but my dad ran to the phone and called 911, even though she told him not to. A couple of minutes later, she was complaining of gas and asked for some Melanta. As I was about to give her a spoonful, she started rolling around on the bed and then went silent. I yelled for my dad to call 911 again and screamed at her to wake up. While he was on the phone, my dad asked if she was breathing, and I said no. Her teeth were clenched, and she inhaled once. The one thing I'll never forget was how bright blue her eyes were. I ran out to flag down the ambulance, and my dad went in to perform CPR. As I left, I turned and yelled, "Don't you dare leave me," and waited outside. When they arrived, I ran to my room and prayed and cried until they took her away. Later, I left for the hospital with my dad and pastor. We eventually learned she had two heart attacks, and I had been there for the second one. The 23rd will mark 4 years since she passed. Please take time to be with your family. Story 27. I was heading to a trailhead for my first multi-day hiking trip, and I was going alone. It was in the Wind River Range of Wyoming. The trailhead was over 2 hours from the highway and another half hour from the nearest gas station. Cell service was extremely poor. About an hour off the highway, I let a pickup truck pass me on the gravel road. About a minute later, I noticed two teenagers on the side of the road. The pickup stopped and spoke with them. I figured they just needed a ride or some help, and since it was getting dark and I still had a ways to go, I kept driving. Then I got to the top of a hill and saw a wrecked pickup about 1,000 feet ahead of me. It was completely destroyed. Now I realize those kids really needed help. I looked back and saw the pickup truck, with an older couple in it, coming toward me. I pulled over and asked what had happened. The woman said, "They rolled their pickup. They're not hurt, but their friend is dead." That hit hard. I turned around and went to offer the kids some water and comfort. One was a girl who seemed to be in shock. She stayed calm and explained what had happened. The boy, on the other hand, was sobbing and barely responsive. He just kept saying, "My best friend is dead." He was only 18. The girl tried to comfort him, saying maybe there was still a chance he could be saved. He responded loudly, "I did CPR. You saw it. He's gone." At that point, she broke down too. "I didn't know what to do. I was holding back tears myself." Eventually, the older couple returned and said they were heading to the top of the hill to find forest rangers and emergency services. The kids asked if they could ride with them, and they agreed. The woman in the pickup told me they could handle it from there. She gave me directions to a nearby campground and thanked me for helping. As I drove past the wreck, I saw the body, covered by one of the teens' jackets. I broke down after that. It's heartbreaking to think that three kids my age went out for what should have been a fun trip and ended up losing their best friend. Story 28. These events happened about a month ago. My family and I had just moved to Colorado from Michigan. I'm a huge disc golf enthusiast, and since I didn't know anyone in the area yet, I figured disc golf would be the best way to meet people. It has always been an incredibly relaxing and peaceful hobby for me. At least it used to be. I was out playing at a beautiful course with mountain views from every hole. I was taking my time because I had my two kids, my wife, and my brother with me. I let two guys play through since I was moving slowly. One of them was really good. He almost made a hole in one at the spot I let them pass. When we got to the basket, he had forgotten his putter, so I ran it over to him. He was friendly and thanked me. On the next hole, they were still nearby. My wife was about 50 feet away with the kids when suddenly, one of the guys pulled out a gun and took his own life. It was the most shocking thing I've ever witnessed. Thankfully, my kids didn't see anything, but it was horrifying. I haven't played disc golf since. That one moment completely changed what used to be a peaceful escape for me. Story 29. I have watched my son die 9 times. He is still alive, by the way, and doing great. He has a rare disorder that causes him to go into cardiac arrest and stop breathing very easily. The worst incident happened when he was 4 years old. He was bitten by a few ants just a few feet away from me. He is not allergic, but my son does not produce any adrenaline, and the pain actually caused him to go into shock and collapse. I administered CPR while my 3 other children watched. My son was blue and unresponsive. He was rushed to the hospital where a team worked on him for over an hour. He was pronounced dead after about an hour and a half. The doctor, with tears in her eyes, was doing a final check when she suddenly found a faint pulse. My son remained in a coma, and I was told that it was impossible for him not to be brain damaged. I was urged to consider turning off life support. I agreed to it once my mother arrived. It took her 2 days to secure a flight and get to me. In that time, with the help of friends, I planned my son's funeral. Then something miraculous happened. I always did the little shave and a haircut rhythm with him, and he would respond with the last 2 notes. I was holding his hand and tapped out the rhythm, and he responded with the final 2 notes. I panicked and told the nurses and doctors, but they didn't believe me. They thought I was a grieving mother imagining things. They explained that as the brain shuts down, it can sometimes appear as though there are signs of life. I refused to sign a DNR. My son woke up the next day. He had no brain bleeds and no brain damage. There is no medical explanation for this. Doctors speculated that, because he had experienced several cardiac arrests before, his brain might have adapted to lower oxygen levels. I still don't understand how that's possible. Either way, his condition has improved as he's grown, and we no longer live in fear of him suddenly collapsing. Those first 5 years were brutal, and as a mother, watching this happen over and over again was horrifying. I pray that no one else has to witness what I did. Story 30. Just 2 weeks ago, I saw a boxer get hit by a car that clearly wasn't paying attention. If I had been driving, I would have missed the dog by a mile, and its life would have been saved. I have 2 boxers, and they're my favorite breed. I'm also incredibly attached to my dogs because I can't have kids, except through adoption. I can't stop seeing the image of that dog being struck. It also brought up memories I've tried to bury. Years ago, I came home from work when my little brother was around 7. My mom had recently gotten him a dog, a black lab. He was outside with her as I stopped to get the mail. Pepper, the dog, ran into the road to greet me. She had never done that before, but she was only 11 months old, so I guess I shouldn't have been surprised. A woman drove by, hit Pepper on purpose, stopped, backed up to ensure she was over her, and then got out of her truck. She told me, "That's what you get for not training your dog to stay out of the road," and then quickly drove off. I was in shock. I yelled at my brother to grab a blanket while I got her in the car. We rushed to the vet, my brother cradling Pepper's head in his lap. I paid $2,400 on the spot for emergency surgery, even though the odds of survival were low. 4 hours later, she was officially gone. I'm crying writing this. It's been so long since I've thought about Pepper. Seeing that boxer get hit brought back a flood of images and pain I had buried for years. Story 31. It's late, so no one will probably see this, but here goes anyway. My husband and I witnessed, not the actual drowning, but the aftermath of a teenager drowning at a local lake. He was out on a boat with a group, about 50 yards from shore. They were all jumping off, diving, and swimming around. Nothing seemed out of the ordinary. My husband and I were just sitting on the beach enjoying the day. It's hard to explain, but suddenly the entire atmosphere shifted, even before the yelling began. At first, we didn't know what was going on, but there was a lot of movement between the boat and the shore. Frantic yelling, diving, chaos. Before we knew it, a body was being pulled onto the shore, and an ambulance arrived. The paramedics rushed to the beach and gave the teen CPR for what felt like hours, but was probably about 30 minutes. Everyone on the beach was silent. One bystander started a prayer circle, and people instinctively joined hands and prayed. I'm not religious at all, but in that moment it felt automatic, like a way to do something. During all of this, there was an older man, his father, I believe, screaming and making sounds I can only describe as howling. They were the rawest, most emotional sounds I've ever heard. Several times he ran into the lake and threw himself into the water as if trying to drown himself. Each time, people from their group ran in to pull him out. He'd cry out again and then go back in. He was also yelling words, but they were in another language, Arabic, I think, so I didn't understand what he was saying. After the ambulance left, my husband and I went home. We were glued to the news and online updates. This was 2002, so the internet wasn't what it is today. Several hours later, a news report confirmed the teen had died. It was stated that he had already passed by the time they pulled him from the water, and that the paramedics had continued CPR mainly for the sake of the onlookers and the family. 14 years later, it's still the most horrifying thing I've ever experienced. Story 32. It was midday, and we were enjoying a meal at a restaurant between ski runs. We were eating outside because my friend's parents were smokers. As we ate, we watched a rescue helicopter fly past us toward the top of the mountain. About 10 minutes later, it came back. We saw it hook onto something my friend's father thought was an avalanche cable. I've never looked into what that actually was. And then it all started. The helicopter lost a major part of its rotor and began losing altitude, spinning around, heading straight in the direction of the restaurant. At that moment, it was maybe 20 to 30 meters from us. My friend's dad pushed us and yelled at everyone to run, so we took off. We had made it maybe 5 to 6 meters when he shouted, "It's going to crash near the gas tank. Get down." Then he tackled us both to the ground. 2 seconds later, we heard a massive crash, metal slamming into snow and concrete. We got up and started running like something was chasing us. But here's my mistake. I looked back for just 1 second while running, and I can still see it clearly. The helicopter was just a twisted heap of metal. One person had been crushed near where the door had been. The snow was stained red, and the smell of gasoline was overwhelming. There was smoke, but no fire. For those wondering, the crash happened just 5 to 10 meters from the restaurant's gas tank. 3 people died, the pilot, a rescuer, and another individual, possibly a skier. What still puzzles us is that the pilot had over 80,000 kilometers logged and was very experienced in that area. As always, things can go wrong. After that, our ski trip was overtaken by paranoia, and visions of crashing helicopters haunted us day and night. A replacement helicopter arrived the very next day. No idea from where, but every time it flew nearby, we couldn't take our eyes off it. Story 33. In the mid-80s, I was driving home, north from Las Vegas on E15. There's a section of freeway before the Arizona border where the north and southbound roads are separated by about 20 feet or so of rocky median. A station wagon was going south. I didn't see what caused the car to swerve, but it turned into the median and started rolling. The car came to a stop just a short distance past where I had pulled over. After the first roll, I remember most of what happened very clearly, even now, with a few exceptions. This all took place in less than a minute. Something came flying out of one of the rear passenger windows. It soared high into the air. I didn't realize what I was seeing until later. It was a baby seat. I can't tell if I saw a baby in it, If I focus, I just see a blur. I don't know where it landed. On the next roll, a small body came flying out of the other rear passenger window, arms and legs spread like a star. It landed hard in front of the car and was rolled over seconds later. What sticks with me most, though, is the mother's head. She had somehow come partially out of the passenger seat window, and on each roll, her head was more and more destroyed. I don't remember how many times the car flipped, but every time it did, more of her head was lost until the vehicle finally stopped. I can still hear the sliding sound her body made as it sank back into the car. I found part of her head while running to the wreck. It was just her forehead, one eye, and part of her nose, and she was crying. I felt numb. I wasn't reacting. It didn't feel real. I have no idea how long it took for emergency responders to arrive. They kept trying to treat me for shock. I kept insisting I wasn't hurt and asked them if they had found the baby. It wasn't until I saw Ant struggling with a piece of brain matter that I finally lost it. Story 34. I've experienced a few things in life, but one of the most intense happened when I was 18. I was volunteering as a nursing student in Ghana. One day I was on a bus heading home from a national park I had visited. Suddenly, the bus in front of ours veered off the road and fell into a large ditch, rolling over several times. Our bus stopped, and I immediately ran toward the crash. Inside the wreckage, I saw about 60 people scattered, some dead, some in agony, some trapped. I quickly realized I was the only one there with any medical training. Adrenaline took over. I began organizing the people who were uninjured, giving them instructions to help the wounded. It was chaos, but I did what I could. About 45 minutes later, the first ambulances arrived. After all the surviving victims were taken to the hospital, I returned to my own bus, covered in blood, and we drove home. I tried to calm down during the ride. The next day, I went back to work at the local hospital. Two of my patients died during my shift. I entered a mental state where I couldn't think or function properly. I felt completely numb. I took 3 days off to reflect on everything that had happened. Somehow, I pulled myself together and completed the remaining 4 weeks of my assignment at the hospital. In just those 5 months in Ghana, I witnessed more than I ever imagined. But I have to say, it made me stronger. For example, 2 months after I got home, my neighbor died by suicide. My father and I were the ones who found him and cut him down. That very night, I went to the bar and carried on with life, while my dad needed several weeks to recover emotionally. I'm 22 now. I've earned my Bachelor of Nursing and am currently studying tropical nursing so I can work for Doctors Without Borders. This is actually the first time I've shared any of this, not even with my parents, friends, or my girlfriend. It feels good to type this out. I feel a bit relieved. Story 35. My senior year, I decided to play football after wrestling for 9 years. It was the fourth game of the season, and it was pouring rain, but we kept playing. I was a defensive tackle, and during one play, right up the middle, one of our own players was flung into my leg. I'll never forget the sound it made. It sounded like twisting a plastic water bottle. Combined with the image of sitting up and physically moving my leg back over from the knee down, yeah, I'd say I'm scarred. Physically too, lol. The doctor who did my surgery said it was the worst leg injury he had ever operated on, and he'd done over 3,000 of them. The funny thing is, when I went back to the locker room, I was in so much shock that I just accepted what the trainers were saying, that it was probably just a torn ACL. My leg was moving in directions it definitely shouldn't have. Turns out my ACL wasn't even torn. My bone was just crushed so badly that it gave way under pressure. I did, however, tear my meniscus and MCL. Story 36. I was walking home from school when I saw a young boy spinning around in his front yard. His mother was on the porch, and some other family members were leaning on the fence watching him. As I passed by, I heard someone say, "There's blood." Curious, I stepped closer for a better look. The boy was twirling around with a white puppy tied to the end of some fishing line. The line was wrapped tightly around the puppy's neck. The puppy was still alive and yelping, its fur dyed red from the blood. The blood was flinging onto the dead patches of grass in the yard. And the boy was laughing. He was having fun. I looked at the adults for help, but they were just talking among themselves, mouths moving, completely ignoring what was happening. I had been there for a minute or two by this point. The puppy's neck seemed elongated, and the boy showed no signs of stopping. The cries continued somehow, though the puppy was clearly suffering. I remember just wanting it to be over. I stood at the fence, too young to intervene, but old enough to understand what was going on. I watched until the puppy's fur was blood-soaked halfway down its back, until it stopped crying, until its skin gave way, and the fishing line finally snapped through, leaving the body dangling from torn tissue. I found blood on my t-shirt later that day at home. The body and the severed head were left in the front yard for 2 days. I was 11 or 12. The boy was probably 5 or 6. What was wrong with those people? Story 37. This is one of those experiences that was only terrifying in hindsight. I was on I-5 heading to pick up my dad from the airport in Portland, when suddenly a wave of fire trucks, police cars, and ambulances started flying past me. It lasted for a solid 5 minutes. I had no idea where they were going. On our way back north, we found out. A small Cessna had taken off from a nearby airstrip and crashed into a hill at the end of the runway. From a distance, it looked like a relatively minor accident. The plane wasn't visibly wrecked, just a few scuffs. The ground wasn't torn up either, just a faint path through the grass. We thought, well, at least it wasn't a bad crash. The next day, we read a news report. The plane had been carrying 2 passengers to Alaska, and it was overloaded. It couldn't gain enough altitude by the end of the runway. The pilot died on impact, and the other 2 were in critical condition. I still don't understand how something that looks so harmless could be so devastating. Story 38. My dad had cancer. Against all odds, he survived something every doctor said should have killed him, but it was an incredibly hard road. I was away at college and knew my dad was sick, but I had no idea how serious it was. I guess my mom wanted to protect me and my sister by not telling us everything. One day we went to visit him at the hospital and the mood was different. Everyone was solemn. We were hugged and kissed by family members and then led into the ICU. I'll never forget what I saw. He was lying there, completely still, hooked up to a wall of machines. He was so bloated I barely recognized him. And just so still. I couldn't say goodbye. I just talked to him until they asked me to leave. And then I completely broke down. I didn't speak to anyone for the rest of the day. He survived that day and many others. I saw him in many more states after that, bleeding from the mouth due to chemo, looking skeletal after months in the hospital, struggling to walk even a few steps. But I'll never forget the way he looked on that bed, that tiny, sterile room filled with machines. That stillness haunts me. Story 39. I was on a business trip last week and had a few free hours before my flight home. So I walked down one of the busy streets to do some window shopping. On the other side of the street, waiting to cross toward me, was a man with his dog on a leash. I watched as a woman pushed past me, screaming, "You're the stupidest and worst kid in the world," while dragging her child into traffic, even though the crosswalk sign wasn't lit up. The child was clearly afraid of dogs and started crying and hiding behind his mother. He stopped right in the middle of the road, blocking traffic. As cars honked, the mother dragged him across the pavement, first by his elbow, then by his leg. The child was crying and clearly in pain. Meanwhile, the dog was barking at them, maybe at the mom, and she just continued dragging him past the dog like nothing was wrong. My jaw dropped. So did everyone else's around me. By the time we crossed the street, they were gone. I don't think anyone said or did anything. It was horrifying, and I can't stop thinking about it, even days later. Story 40. When I was 16, my family was having a 4th of July BBQ with my then-boyfriend's family. A truck sped past the stop sign in front of our house, and my stepmom turned to my dad and said, "He's about to crash." A couple of seconds later, we heard a loud boom and saw smoke. I took off running down the street barefoot alongside my boyfriend's mom. We were running through broken glass. My brother sped past us in his truck with his friend Dave. Before I even reached the scene, Dave came running back, picked me up, threw me over his shoulder, and sprinted me back to the house. My boyfriend's mom was a nurse, so she ran to the scene and confirmed what Dave and my brother were already shouting. The driver had died. He wasn't wearing a seatbelt and was halfway ejected from the vehicle. He was then rolled under his truck as it flipped through someone's yard. My brother held the man's hand as he died. When my brother came home, the look in his eyes was haunting. He just stared at my dad. Then they started yelling at each other about how reckless it was to peel out in a truck around so many kids, and how easily I could have been hit in the street. My brother's not violent, but he slammed the pantry door so hard it broke. Story 41. I've seen dead people before, and it never really bothered me. But this did. There was an elderly man walking around my workplace, not obviously frail or ill, but something about him made me think he could drop dead any moment. I brushed it off and kept working. About 30 minutes later, I walked out of my boss's office and saw the man suddenly stiffen. He gripped his cart tightly and fell backward, pulling it down on top of himself. He hit his head pretty hard. A woman nearby knew CPR and managed to revive him. But what really haunted me wasn't the near death. It was what happened next. After being resuscitated, the man started making these awful, haunting moans. They echoed across the entire building. He had become paralyzed, and the only thing he could do was vocalize his terror. He couldn't move, just lie there, groaning in sheer panic. That moment will never leave me. It wasn't death that scared me. It was the helplessness. Knowing the end was near, and that he had no control, no way to communicate or stop it. It made me feel like maybe it would have been more merciful if he hadn't been revived. Story 42. This is tame compared to many, but it stuck with me. I was about 9 years old, riding the bus to school. We were almost there when we stopped on the highway and were held up for a while. After about 10 minutes, we started moving again, slowly. Suddenly, kids started rushing to the windows on the left side, my side, to look out. I leaned over and looked too. What I saw still stays with me. Blood splattered across the road with small piles of entrails, organs, fur, and the disembodied head of a deer. One of its eyes was hanging out. I had a front row view as our bus slowly coasted by, giving every kid a full look. Eventually, we passed the front of a semi-truck, completely soaked in gore. What stuck with me most, though, was how the kids reacted. It started with quiet chuckles and laughter, and soon the whole bus erupted in cheers. I guess that's how kids deal with shock, laughing as a defense mechanism, but I'll never forget that moment.
We interrupt this program to bring you an important Wayfair message. Wayfair's got style tips for every home. This is Nicole Byer, helping you make those rooms flyer. Today's style tip, when it comes to making a statement, treat bold patterns like neutrals. Go wild! Like an untamed animal print area rug under a rustic farmhouse table from Wayfair.com. Ooh, fierce! This has been your Wayfair style tip to keep those interiors superior.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Lowe's knows that no matter your paint project, saving is at the top of your list. That's why when you shop today, you can buy one, get one free, select Valspar and HGTV Home by Sherwin-Williams one coat coverage interior paints via rebate. Shop these deals in-store or online today at Lowe's. We help, you save. Rebate in form of Visa gift card equal to 100% off the second eligible item purchased before or after applicable discounts, if any. See details. Offer ends 7/9.